From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Patrick Hoskin, in for Evan Dawson. And our connection this hour was made at the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center on East Avenue. Upstairs on the second floor, all the way in the back, is a room, and in that room is a hexagon. Five sides are dark, and the sixth side is open, where you can enter and take in what local artist Catherine Torgerson calls her visual meditation, titled Infinite Blue with Grief and Gratitude. The work is primarily painted glass, with light moving through the visual elements as ambient sounds and even scents fill the room. Torgerson combines these pieces to reflect the confluence of emotions and how we are changed by loss. That's from some language that accompanies the exhibition. And much like the layered paint in different shades of blue that you can see there, grief itself is layered and nonlinear. Art is one way that we can make sense of that. There are songs or films or other pieces of art that we love that we associate with the people we've lost. And of course, there's the act of creating art, the process of which can guide our own healing and help us navigate those complicated emotions. There's been a lot of discussion about this, I feel like, particularly in the past 5 or so years. Catherine Torgerson's work opened at Rocco on December 6th. It's available to see through February 1st. As part of that, also, I want to mention there's a grief-focused writing workshop set to take place on January 18th. We'll learn a little bit more about that in a bit. First, Catherine Torgerson joins us here in the studio. So, Catherine, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Charlie Cote, a licensed clinical social worker whose practice is Path Forward Counseling. Charlie, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
One of the avenues that Path Forward offers is creative wellness, which I definitely want to talk about. I think we will get it to that in a second. I think I set the scene for your exhibition, Catherine. So it might be cool to talk a little bit, just broadly speaking, about. So it's titled Infinite Blue with Grief and Gratitude. Can you talk a little bit about where that idea comes from to explore those, and maybe to explore those two topics together in this work?
So I have thought about grief a lot. Just in my personal life. And I think that I always have turned to art in moments of grief or just complicated emotions, especially when dealing with the aftermath of grief and all of the anxiety and depression that can sometimes go alongside of it. Having a creative practice has been incredibly important to me. I think it helps really almost like tie me to the world in front of me and kind of get me out of my mind, where sometimes like the spiralized doomsday sort of thinking can live. So I think that by working on this project, it had me reflect a lot on people that are had been in my life that aren't there anymore, and kind of have appreciation for their loss, and move from a place of despair to gratitude for them having been there at all.
Yeah, that's what I love about, even it's present in the title, grief and gratitude, and then also outside of the room before you walk in, you kind of have an invitation for folks to maybe think of the ways that they've experienced grief or loss, but also some gratitude, or also some of the opportunities that maybe that affords them too. That's a big piece of this as well, right?
Oh, definitely. I think I've thought a lot about, in this particular piece, the way that even the work is constructed, I lie down layers of paint and then use different materials to remove pieces of or layers of the paint as well. So what is left on the paintings are these really organic patterns, and I like that the paintings themselves are as much created as by what was laid down as they are by what was taken away. And that's something that I think a lot just about myself, that, you know, the person that I am today, it's not just the people that I've known in my life, but it's also the people that I've lost in my life have really shaped my perspective, the way I approach life, art, etc.
Mm-hmm. This might be a good opportunity to just talk a little bit about creative wellness. So you were speaking, Catherine, about this idea of sort of creating something that I'm just kind of curious about is when creating through a period of grief, or maybe a period where, because as we know, it's nonlinear, it can be layered, as you said, maybe a period where it feels the hardest. When creating in that period, some art, whether that's poetry or whether it's music or visual art, is there some, is some of that directed into the fact of, well, I've experienced loss, but here now I'm holding something, or there is something physical, tangible that I can create, even if it's a song, which is a little harder to like physically hold, but you know what I'm saying? Like there's an end product of me feeling this way. Like, is there some, and that may be totally specific on each person, but that's something I always think about, because like, I don't know, to be able to channel that into creation in the wake of loss is something I would think about.
There's three aspects to that. I mean, one of the things that happens in creative wellness practice is a way of reorganizing your life or rebuilding your world. A loss is not grievous if it doesn't result in you losing your place in the world. You have experienced something incredibly chaotic, incredibly destructive. Creative wellness is a practice that allows you to re-enter into the experience or face the experience in a more bearable, manageable way. In some ways, art becomes like a crucible or a container for intensities, right? And so in terms of rebuilding your world, you've got catharsis. You've got a way of learning about how you really feel about the relationship that was lost. You know, implied in every loss is love. Mm-hmm. There was an attachment and love, and that gets lost. That's devastating. I lost my place in the world. So for me, I lost my son in 2005 to melanoma, and that was devastating. And I was adrift, didn't know, you know, what to do. And my first relationship to grief was, it's ugly, it's chaotic. That was the new place. And I lost my ability to have the in-the-moment experiences with my son anymore. And he was a musician, an artist, a poet. He taught us that certainty is the cage that keeps us safe from curiosity. I've been released from the cage. I'm the songbird, and I'm flying for the window. I know it's closed, but I plan on breaking through. And then we lost, you know, his wise beyond his year self, you know, and all the music he could have made. So when I think about creative wellness, I think about catharsis, self-expression. We have a saying in the grief recovery group that we do at Path Forward Creative Wellness that what you run from pursues you. What you face transforms you. So when you engage in a process of catharsis or self-expression, what starts to happen is you face it and you change your relationship to it. Instead of it being ugly and chaotic, now you start to say, there might be something of value here, something that could help me grow, and something that could help me transform or reimagine myself in the world. And what I like to think about isn't so much thinking about the loss as much as I think about, how has my life been changed because I was in a relationship with you? Mm. What do I want to see more of in my life because I had a relationship with you? So then you can start to memorialize or honor. You were talking about, you know, the art that you do, and it made me think of, in poetry, we have a form called elegy. And what an elegy is two things. It's a lament, but it's also a celebration. It's got those two things, which mm-hmm. might feel a little paradoxical, but that's mm-hmm. where the gratitude part comes in, you know, loss and gratitude, which I really like. There's one other component to creative wellness that I think is essential, and that's social connectivity. When you make art, you're communicating not only with yourself, but you're also communicating with others. So people are going to come to your show and they're going to connect with what they see. And they're going to feel some resonance with that. You know, I think Robert Frost said, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader. And that what we do as artists is we sort of express what is universally felt. Mm-hmm. So that's creative wellness in a nutshell.
It's so interesting to hear this also when Catherine and I, you and I spoke a little bit about your work, and I was able to see your work before we did this show. How much of what Charlie's saying there, like, do you find relates to your life or just your practice of creating art, and maybe specifically as it relates to Infinite Blue?
Mm-hmm. A lot, actually. I'm just nodding the entire time that Charlie was speaking. And also just want to say how sorry I am for your loss. It was very resonant to me when you were talking about this kind of like this confluence of emotions, this conflict of emotions. It's not just bitter, but sometimes it's sweet. There's like sweetness that we can only recognize in loss sometimes. I think that it is Susan Cain, who wrote this book called Bittersweet, talks about longing and how in longing there's like this actual like elongation, this stretching, this like reaching towards something. And I relate to that a lot, just in terms of like, I think that it is moments of grief or loss where I feel like I've actually had a lot of the most personal growth. So it is this strange sort of feeling where so much pain and grief actually is mirrored by equal amounts of gratitude.
The poet Rumi says the light gets out where the wound is. So you probably wrote that down.
Yeah. So you have that written down in your notebook you just showed it. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and this is part of why I think the room at Rocco where you can experience your work, Catherine, is so powerful. There are other elements I mentioned, not just the visual work, not just the layered paint that you discussed, but also there are scents that come in. Scent is obviously very tied to memory. There's also the sort of like very intentional lighting, which kind of you sort of walk in this sort of half circle shape to check out the artwork. The light is kind of guiding you. The lines are very, very much suggesting motion. It feels very much like you're experiencing something that definitely is not a straight line. I'm wondering how much of that is. I'm always fascinated by like you have an idea about doing something, talking about practical stuff. I don't know. That's always, especially with art, like how much of that. Is that always how you envisioned it? Did you maybe envision it a different way? I think about this in terms of this topic. It can be so hard to physicalize and to actually like make something that you can experience. So I would love if you can maybe talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think it actually, I'm not sure if it, came actualized in the way I had initially planned it. I think it was sort of an organic process from the beginning. It was more like I had this feeling that I wanted to work through, and it was interesting where I found out that that I would be able to house this installation in the Rocco upstairs gallery, and I was very excited about that because I just thought it was the perfect place. And then maybe it was even the next day after finding this out that I learned some difficult personal news. Somebody who I was very close to had died. Mm. But it was like strangely this blessing where I had this perfect space, this very truncated time to complete the project at this moment where I'm experiencing this really difficult loss, and just to have, this all laid out so I could, work on this project in a really very like conscious and intentional way, I think was very helpful to me. And, Patrick, you had talked about like whether like the non-linear lights or the movement in the paintings, and that was definitely very intentional. I think that a lot of times, well, grief is talked about as though it's in stages, and it's talked about as though it's sequential, which I think is actually, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was the one who talked about these five stages of grief, and I think that it's misinterpreted. It was never her intention to suggest that there are sequential, but I think it's often considered that way, even though I think those who have experienced grief know that that's not actually the case. So I did want to have in these paintings the light kind of illuminating different sections in a non-linear way, these paths that are, kind of meandering through the paintings, not suggesting that, you know, we might experience one emotion one day and have it be up against another totally different conflicting emotion, but that's all part of this process. It's normal to feel, you know, acceptance one minute followed by total resentment and then followed by total, you know, relief even, or guilt, or all of these emotions that aren't actually linear, but that's just your own personal experience, and that makes it, you know, right.
Yeah, right. As we listen to Catherine talk about that, Charlie, I'm wondering how much, so you mentioned your own experience as well with grief. So it's sort of like you can, in my mind, maybe there's two different ways of speaking about this. One is through sort of your own experience, but then one is also through the practice of creative wellness a little bit. Is there, when you're implementing some of the practices, you mentioned sort of the three like criteria of creative wellness, when those get implemented, like, or I guess maybe even the process of that, what does that look like? Does that look like a traditional, you mentioned a workshop, I think you mentioned a workshop or a class. Does it look like that compared to more, maybe like more of a one-on-one talk therapy session? Does it depend on the person?
Yeah, it depends on, you know, whether if you're a creative arts therapist, you might work with somebody one-on-one, but in terms of what we're doing at Path Forward Creative Wellness, it's mostly group experience. Sometimes it's collaborative art where we're all contributing to a piece together. Sometimes it's everybody's working on their own expressive process. You know, we'll give a prompt of some kind. Sometimes we're going to do things like Zentangling or something like that, which is more of a meditative process. Mm. So there are different aspects to it. Sometimes it's just sharing what's coming up. We like to say that we're practicing the art of not making art, to sort of demystify, like only artists can do art. I think one of the things that, you know, is implied in creative is creating your world, or, you know, like our consciousness, if you will, is a way of saying how we see our place in the world and what we think, what we see is what's possible and what's not possible. So early in grief, it feels like nothing's possible. Mm-hmm. Nothing makes sense. But the art of creating is about making sense or making meaning out of something that's seemingly meaningless. So David Kessler, who's really pretty renowned in the grief recovery area, worked with Kubler-Ross and came up with a sixth stage, and not linear, but it's about finding meaning. Mm. But the thing that's a myth in our culture is that grief somehow ends or resolves.
Right, sure, yeah.
It doesn't. You find meaning in your grief, but you carry it with you for your whole life. It just doesn't become maybe so overbearing or overwhelming, but it's always there, and it will pop up at, you know, unexpected times, you know?
Is there this might be a really difficult question, and we're certainly not going to solve it here, but that made me think, how do we change or challenge that notion that grief has sort of a fixed endpoint, and maybe try to start incorporating that? Is that just maybe starting with personal conversations or some community building? Like, well, just the awareness of it is something
I'll think tell you really... a personal anecdote about that in my own family. So, you know, my mom, you know, is fiercely loyal to me, as most moms are with their kids, right? And she was worried that I was going to get stuck in my grief. So there's this notion that you're going to, you know, just get so despondent and filled with despair that you never transcend it. And so then there's this feeling like, okay, like at one point she said, no more poems about your son, you know, write about something else, you know? And my first response was like, well, why? Like, I'm going to write about whatever I want to write about. Like, but then I thought about it and I thought, okay, she really is worried about me and she doesn't want to see me suffer. And so it was spoken to me out of love and concern. So I could hear it that way. I'd say, you're really worried about me, aren't you? So I made a little joke. I said, I'll put in a word with a muse to give me some new material.
Yeah. And to that point, so you brought one of your poetry books here, right? That's,
yeah, I Play His Red Guitar. Yeah.
I Play His Red Guitar.
I mean, I could read the poem cycle about where I speak my grief and then my mom responds. You're interested in that?
If that's in there, that would be very appropriate, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. While I'm finding it,
sure.
Talk amongst yourselves.
So 2019, so this is 5 years, but the poems I imagine date from not just, you know, from years leading up to that as well.
Correct.
Okay. So it's an interesting thing with family conversations, right? We were talking about this. Something that I think also, maybe this is on people's minds as we talk about family gatherings, talking about the holiday season can be a very tough time for grief for some people. I don't mean, it's not like, okay, I have the grief experts here, I'm going to pick your brain, because that's not what this is at all. But I was curious, like, is there a go-to mechanism for dealing with that? Or do you approach, does it come a little bit differently during this time? Like, can art be really helpful, particularly at this time for you? Maybe Catherine, if you have anything to add. Or...
Well, for me, art has always been a really helpful outlet. Art, written, visual, you know, whatever. Just, I think the practice of creating something, making something out of feelings, or and it was interesting, Charlie, to hear you talk about the different offerings in creative wellness practice. And you're talking about like Zentangles or, you know, journaling or a number of different mediums. And I like the fact that, you know, when you're in a state of grief, like sometimes a lot of things can feel too challenging to do. Like you might not have the emotional energy to do a lot. And but I think that with a creative practice, like you can scale it up or scale it down depending on what is available to you at a particular moment. And one thing that I've done throughout my life at different moments is I have this small practice where I'll make a goal for myself that if I don't do anything else today, I have to take one photo of something that I find beautiful. And it can be, you know, if I'm going for a walk, something I notice, you know, like a flower sprouting out from the concrete or something like that. Or if it's, you know, if I'm really in my grief and I can't, you know, leave my room that day, it's something that I can still look for and find. Just like with the shadows, like hitting the wall or, you know, something, you can always find something. But I think like what it really is doing is training myself to be very present and like observant of the world around me. And that's something that I think takes me from a place where grief is really challenging and to a place where it's something that like it comes more like appreciation, like more tied to gratitude.
Exactly. Phil Stutz has a tool. I don't know if you've heard of Phil Stutz, but there was a documentary with Jonah Hill?
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah. So he was his therapist, right?
Yeah. And one of the tools is called the Grateful Flow Tool. And so he draws a picture of a black cloud, which can represent depression, anxiety, intense grief. And then the gratitude practice, finding that one beautiful thing, helps you get out of the cloud and then sort of connect with the source of all goodness or good things, beauty. Mm-hmm. So that's what I thought of when you were talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have found... So can you back this up a little bit? This is a poetic sort of interpretation of you having this conversation with your mother.
That's
where
right.
She's essentially saying maybe it's time to move past...
That's right.
...your grief in terms of writing about it.
And I will say that my mother gets the more lyrical moment in this. So the first one's called Fall and No More of Your Songs. And the second one, well, I'll say it when I get there, but Fall and No More of Your Songs. The leaves still brighten. All that's expected when summer lets go of its green and the light lies down in paler angles, like lovers after a season. Again, the restless swing of the hammock, birds finding shelter. I look for you in the leaves, cold in this singing, what notes I remember each fall, the treble in my voice, what now opens beyond life's falsetto. When I asked what happens next, you said, every drop of rain returns to the earth, to rivers, the ocean, to this well I now draw from, your songs in my throat, caught in the heart's hesitation, what closed when I turned from the door. So then my mom's imagined response, no more of your songs. Of course the leaves brighten. It's expected in fall. Let them go, these sad songs that you sing. Turn to other loves, the swing of the hammock, birds finding shelter. He left us his songs, not yours. Let them lift you. Who can know what happens next, when it will rain?
So that's Charlie Cote reading from his book, I Play His Red Guitar. So I love that. I'm just processing. But that, so there's such an interesting, because now we have a lot of levels here, right? We have the level of your lived experience, the lived grief, the grief as it's channeled through your work, and then kind of your mother's response to that, that then you then respond to via poetic form. So there's a lot of really processing happening via art here, which is kind of interesting. So has your mom, what did your mom think of that?
She's delighted. She said, you got it. You got it. You got me.
And there's such a, this idea of the relationship between your grief and other people. There's something that I think has come up in that actually the New York Times, there's this photo essay in the New York Times in May of this year. Basically, a reporter talked to about 10 artists, musicians, photographers, writers about grief and sort of about creating art in relation to that. So it's actually really, really, really valuable piece. Some people had lost parents or siblings or children. There was a musician named Ben Queller, who's like a singer-songwriter, lost his teenage son Dorian in a car accident. But he mentioned, you know, it's going to be, this is him speaking in the New York Times, it's going to be an interesting album. There are quirky, fun, jubilant vibes, but then there are some extreme lows. It's kind of got this up and down thing. That's what grief is, these ups and downs. There's one song Dorian, his son, was writing before he died, and he never finished it. It's so good, I'm thinking of finishing it, so it would be a Dorian and Ben co-write, which I think would be really cool. I love this idea between, I don't know, that and Charlie, you may have some, you mentioned some of the notes in some of the songs and some of the creations that your son had done.
I have done that, actually.
So you've done that.
He left a whole book of his lyrics, a lot of them unfinished. And one of the things that I did is I went back and I gave myself some rules to follow in response to him. And I wrote poems that sort of took language of his and then transformed it, you know, as a conversation between the two of us. And that was an amazing thing to do. There's a poetic form called an apostrophe, which is speaking to someone who's no longer there. Mm. And so that's kind of what I was doing with that. And then also finishing some of his stuff that was unfinished and sort of co-collaborating with him on some things. And that was a lot of fun to do too.
Yeah. So and that's a great response, because that's my initial question hearing that is, how was that experience? It seems like it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, but it was more than fun. It felt at times poignant.
Sure.
You know, so there was like the bittersweet quality that you were talking about, Catherine, you know, where it would provoke some sad feelings again. And maybe a little doubt, like, I wonder what he would think about that. Would he roll his eyes and say, that is such like, that's like dad joke stuff, dad. Like, come on.
Because that would be, I would imagine that feeling might be a little, the self-doubt a little bit, but you just, there was one
in particular where I said, is it okay for me to do this? Mm-hmm. I said this to him, and even in the poem that I wrote, is it okay to take your stuff and repurpose it? Is that all right? I don't really know the answer to that, but I'm going to say, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, sure. I love this idea of sort of it becomes an invitation, right? It becomes a way of being closer to this person, and collaborating. It's a great way of thinking about just the sort of the nature of collaboration. So I love that too. I love the idea of sort of channeling that, not just your son's work, but also this conversation with your mother about that. There's a lot of ways that I think people, and this is why I think art can be so valuable for people. Again, I mentioned songs, I mentioned films, different pieces of art that help people go through this. What I am really curious about, and part of why I wanted to have this conversation, is there, if someone is going through some grief and they're sort of in this moment where it feels extremely hard to get past, they have this art available to them that they want to make, that they want to start doing something, how do they begin is, I think, always the hardest part. And so what you mentioned earlier, Catherine, simple as taking a photo of something every day that's beautiful. Maybe it's a good thing to just start that small.
For me, that was something I think. So I lost my husband in sort of a drawn out traumatic way. And I was having a really difficult time dealing with that. It was the beginning of 2020. So we had been living abroad and traveling, and I had to move back to the States. We got divorced, and later he died.
Oh, wow.
But trying to deal with that, you know, normally I would turn to writing to try to make sense of my emotions, but that wasn't really available to me at that time. I wasn't really able to work on art the way that I would typically. So what I was really looking for was just sort of, you know, just a tiny step in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with these photographs, just one beautiful photo a day. And from that, it was able to, it's like a muscle, you know what I mean? It got a little easier. That allowed me to, you know, to grow that into photo series, or to grow that to a point where I was able to make enough sense of some of the emotions that were raging inside of me, that it got to a point where I was then able to put pen to paper. But I think trying to find something that's really tiny and approachable is a good way, because that can, you know, building a habit or a routine can be very like satisfactory, and it gets like the momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can help grow into something bigger, and to try to not like beat yourself up along the way if you're not able to like create the type of work that you typically would when you're in certain moments of intense grief.
Yeah, I found that in the middle of my intense grief, like writing creatively about it was almost impossible. So I would have had to do other kind of practices. I remember the year of the pandemic, I was doing a lot of doodling,
mm-hmm.
just stress doodling.
Mm-hmm.
I called it psychodoodling. And, you know, and it was just me trying to calm my anxiety. And that led me to exploring like tangling,
mm-hmm.
which was a more formalized kind of process where you're given a fragment and then you repeat that fragment in a grid. And then it creates bigger shapes and forms, and I found I got a lot of pleasure out of that. And I started getting, the more I did it, the more inspired I got, and the better I got at it. Then it led me to doing abstract expressionist stuff that didn't really have any representational quality to it. It was just pure expression,
right?
And just being in the moment and just seeing what would emerge on the page, which was also a way that I started writing poetry. I really like giving myself a restriction, because I find for some reason that ignites my imagination much more than I just have a blank page and say, okay, just start writing.
Mm.
I like to give myself a little puzzle to solve or a little challenge. Sometimes that helps me get into it. But what I did find during the pandemic, I wrote 5 lines a day for a whole year before the pandemic started. And I did it in a form called a Tonka form.
Mm-hmm.
And my process was this: I would read poems by Rumi. I went through a year with Rumi, and I would read the Rumi poem, and then I would write my 5 lines, and I kept the really strict structure of 5-7-5-7-7. And then the next day, I did it all over again. I read the next day for the Rumi poem, and then I started my next poem with a fragment of the last line from the day before, and I strung this through a whole year just as a meditative process, I guess. And what was really interesting is the writing got stronger and stronger as I moved further and deeper into the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to reflect things that were actually happening in my life at the time. And it helped really, it was a great container for all the anxiety that showed up during the pandemic, for sure.
Sure, yeah.
But
absolutely.
I just want to say, Catherine, I'm just so sorry for your losses. I mean, wow. I'm so sorry.
Well, thank you it's one of those things like, and Patrick and I were talking about this the other day. It's, you know, grief is something that I think essentially everyone can relate to. And, you know, at a certain point, you're going to have to deal with grief. And if it's not the death of someone, it's, you know, just the loss of somebody's presence in our life. If they moved away, or, you know, someone leaving our life, us having to leave a place we called home. There's a lot of different forms of grief.
Yeah.
And I'd like to just thank you both too for being here and being so vulnerable. We've been speaking with Charlie Cote, who's a licensed clinical social worker. The practice is called Path Forward Counseling, talking about creative wellness. We also have artist Catherine Torgerson here. Her exhibition, Infinite Blue with Grief and Gratitude, can be seen now through February 1st at the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center. there was, I also didn't mean to cut you off if you wanted to say, I just wanted to make sure I said that on air, because also it's like having this conversation is one thing, having it on the air is another. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's another part. So the novelist Julie Otsuka was also spoken to in that New York Times piece. She brought up a really interesting thing that I also wanted to maybe get your thoughts on. She said, I don't write for catharsis. I write, and I should say part of why I thought of this was just what you said, Charlie. I don't write for catharsis. I write because I love sentences and thinking things through. I'm obsessed with the sound of language and the rhythm. It's not that I have a sad story to tell, so I'll tell it and I'll feel better. If anything, I feel like that story opens you up to more grief, yours and other people's. It's never ending in a way. So, okay, so the way you're both sort of responding to it, that made me think of a lot of like, you know, when you do open yourself up that way to explore grief, it, I guess it can become a, maybe an unintentional invitation for other people to sort of share theirs with you. Have you found that to be the case? Because I imagine that's exhausting, or can be.
Well, it happens different ways for different people. It depends on how much grief somebody else has experienced. I think a lot of times people are afraid to talk to you about your grief if they haven't been through it themselves. I have a friend who said this to me when I first met him. He said, for those of you who have been through this, or for those who you haven't been through this kind of a loss, nothing can be said. Mm. For those of you who have gone through this, nothing need be said. Mm. So there's a sense of connection immediately. I would get a lot of times people would hear about it and they'd almost go white. You know, they get like, oh, maybe it was contagious or something. Mm. And they would often say, I can't imagine what that's like. Mm-hmm. And then I found myself a lot of times wanting to reassure them to say, like, well, I hope you never have to, or something like that. But after a while, you know, you started to, I know people meant well when they said that, so I don't want to be too harsh.
Sure.
Because, you know, people mean well, they just don't know what to say.
Right.
They haven't been through it. So, but it feels like rug burns after a while, you know, after you've heard it 1,000 times, what you're really longing for. And I like what you said about longing, you know, because with under every complaint that we have as humans is a longing for something, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But what we're longing for is somebody to say, tell me about your experience. Mm. We're longing to be seen and to be heard. Everybody's longing for that. I want you to see me. I want you to be heard. That's what we're trying to do at Path Forward Creative Wellness. Everybody's seen and everybody's heard. Everybody's welcome. You know?
Yeah. Like, I think there could be maybe the aversion instinct from someone else comes from, well, I don't know the magic thing that I can say to
exactly.
this person.
Exactly.
When often, as you just said, sometimes it's just a question.
Tell me about your boy.
Yeah.
Tell me what he was like. That would be a nice response. If somebody did that, I'd go like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then I'd want to reciprocate. I'd say, tell me about your life. Tell me about, what brings you joy and satisfaction? What makes you sad? Mm-hmm. You know, to have a conversation. The other thing I like about the conversation we're having is, we've opened a door to this, but it won't be all we have to say about this. Every conversation leaves a door open for another conversation, mm-hmm. which I love.
Which is very much like the missing sixth panel of the hexagon.
That's right.
Yeah, I think, I know, Charlie, you had mentioned that one of the I can't remember how you said it. One of the arms of Path Forward is like community connection mm-hmm. or connection. Mm-hmm. That's definitely been really true to me. I think a lot of times because grief is so uncomfortable for everyone or, you know, you're not really sure what's the right way to talk about it. I found myself at the beginning kind of falling back into the same sort of like classic like, oh, you know, it's for the best or he's in a better place or, you know, just these things that I don't even know if not necessarily I don't believe them. I just never thought about them. It's just kind of like what you say. But when I started speaking more openly about like my real feelings and the feelings that I was sort of like embarrassed by or just sort of like, oh, well, you know, actually there's a lot of relief that this person is gone. There's a level of that. Which doesn't feel like the right thing to say. But when you kind of share some of these like maybe more nuanced or darker emotions or complicated emotions and finding that other people actually can really relate to what you're saying or they have their own version of that, I feel like that's been hugely helpful for me just to be able to, you know, have what I'm feeling inside, like, seen and recognized, mm-hmm. and also feel like that I have a connection with somebody else who can really understand. That's been really hugely helpful for me.
I want to, speaking of writing, we were talking a little bit about writing. So I mentioned this at the beginning, but there's, as part of Infinite Blue with Grief and Gratitude, there's a grief-focused writing workshop that's happening on January 18th. I know it's sort of a small size, so obviously, like, people, there's a link that we can put in the episode description on our website, wxxinews.org. Catherine, can you talk a little bit about kind of the function of that, and also just like the relationship to that as it sort of relates to the artwork itself and just that experience?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. The grief writing workshop is going to be led by Amy Gartenberg, who's a dear friend of mine and a licensed psychotherapist who's based in Rochester. You know, we've both talked about how much writing has helped us work through really complicated times in our life, not even just in, like, the moments of, you know, immediate crisis following some sort of event, but just kind of in the, because we're always incorporating somebody's loss, no matter how long it is. I think, Charlie, you had said, like, you know, acceptance isn't the end, right? It's all about kind of like this ongoing integration and what loss continues to mean to us, how it continues to shape our lives. So I think that this writing workshop and having prompts that help access some of these, like, harder to articulate feelings around grief will be really beneficial. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, we talked about this the other day, but there's a lot of when there is finally when you've been able to, like, write through it or, like, mm-hmm. give some sort of aspect of this your time and attention to kind of untangle it on the page, it can feel like a nice part of that as well, right? There's some, I don't know, some clarity that comes from that, or even just a relief of having gotten some of this down. And I guess the other part of that is community, right? This is a collaborative workshop.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I won't speak for the two of you, but I know that for me, I, like, if I'm dealing with something really difficult, I have just, like, anxiety and depression kind of spiraling in my mind. And a lot of times it's just sort of like these same sort of dark thoughts that just sort of, like, repeat themselves over and over. And I think, like, with writing, it's like you get that first dark thought down. Okay, great. And then you can move to the next thing. Mm. It's like it helps you kind of, like, untangle this rat's nest of, you know, emotion and despair inside of you and get to, like, the next thought. It helps you kind of, like, make sense of that and work through kind of, like, the following emotions that might lie underneath that you wouldn't get to if you're just kind of, like, repeating the same thing in your mind.
Does it work the same way for working in a visual medium, whether that's photography or art? Like, is there a darker sort of physicalization of that you get down on a, you know, in paint, and then you kind of move on, and then you can notice that maybe afterwards, like, oh, I moved into a brighter color palette. I don't know. I'm curious about that. Maybe that's a subconscious thing.
Yeah, I think shapes and color can convey a lot of emotion. I did a piece recently and somebody said it looked like the dark eye of Sauron, and it was not like you at all. And I said, well, it's part of me. It's you know, I'm just, maybe you haven't seen that side of me before.
Yeah.
But
sure.
I was dealing with some darker energies and it really showed up in what got expressed on the page. You know, so I think that is the case. You know, there also are ways you can mix the mediums. You know, you can do painting and collage, and you can do writing on top of that. So a lot mm-hmm. of times expressive art is mixing all those mediums and like, you know, we'll start with just pure expression, and then we'll write, you know, in a response to it. Like, writing a response to a piece of art in poetry is called ekphrastic art. So you're sort of, now you're in a conversation with yourself as the artist or the visual artist. Mm. So now you as a creative writer are now in relationship with you as a visual artist or whatever, and it brings up some interesting dialogue, internal dialogue that is surprising. You know, one of the things that I love about making art is that I'm delighted by discovering something I've always known but didn't know I knew it until I sat down to try to express it. I think that's sort of paraphrasing Robert Frost again, just the pleasure of making art or creating something.
Were you going to say something, Kathy? Oh, I just didn't want to cut you off.
I would say quickly, I think that I agree with what you're saying. And I think for me, working on something and seeing a piece come to life or seeing something that's being produced is sort of a way that I remind myself that, like, even if I feel like I'm stuck in this spot, in these emotions, in this feeling right now, progress is still being made. Like, there's still forward momentum that's happening. And I think having a physical output sometimes, whether it's writing, whether it's a painting or a photograph, is a good reminder of that for me.
Yeah, I just thinking back to my own life, and I realize I'm sort of in the privileged position. I haven't been sharing a lot because I've gotten to be in this seat. But I there are definitely some instances of even, and not necessarily art that I've created, but like a piece of art that I now associate it with some sort of darker time. And maybe I'll avoid that for a little while. And then I sort of unintentionally give it all this power. And then the next time I revisit it, I sort of have to like wade through all of that I kind of, all the stuff that I like heaped onto it. I'm curious if that also, you find that happens with creating art as well.
Yeah, where something mysterious emerges.
Or like where you then revisit something and you realize, okay, now I kind of see what I was doing now, right. And maybe we can go in this other direction now that we're past the...
Well, one of the things you're doing when you're making art is you're stripping away reality constraints, or more so. So it's like if you think about your everyday life, it has maximum reality constraints. But when you start to use active imagination, you're starting to loosen those things, and so other things are starting to be possible, or things can emerge. One way that can happen is you can write in persona. You can write in a voice other than your own. And then you discover other possibilities, and then you step back and you say, what is this thing that just showed up here, and what are its implications, or what does it mean? How does it want to say it? And so you sort of maybe honor the creative process. Mm-hmm. You discover these things, and sometimes they're delightful, but sometimes they're kind of frightening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, yeah. I can definitely see that. I think just to sort of wrap up, I did want to go back to that idea of gratitude. It was sort of the second word, right, in the title, or the second word at the end. It's with infinite blue, with grief and gratitude. Mm-hmm. Catherine, you mentioned another loss you had where it sort of changed the trajectory of your life, and you maybe were on a path and you decided, this is so profoundly impacting me that I'm going to change a couple things in my life. And when we talked about that the other day, you mentioned that was, you saw that as such a great opportunity, and you did have gratitude for that.
Yeah. Well, I know from our earlier conversation what you're referring to, but it's funny because I think of almost every loss that I've experienced, and they've all been like these bifurcating moments in my life where, even if it was someone, regardless of how well I knew them or what the nature of our relationship was, there are losses where just them, dying or leaving had just like a profound impact on my life, where, arguably more than their friendship even had on me necessarily, but the death was this moment where it really made me reevaluate my life. It made me reconsider how I approach relationships, how I think about time, how I think about money, how I think about kind of like all of these like driving forces in my life. And so it is really kind of strange where, when I think back to some of these people, I also want to use it as a way to like honor them, I guess, where their loss contributes to something positive for me. And so I feel a lot of gratitude for, these moments that happened that helped me make sure that I'm being more conscious about how I'm directing my life today.
Yeah, and I appreciate that perspective too. I'm just saying, we actually had a question. You were mentioning, Charlie, a five, it wasn't a haiku quite, it was a 5-7
Yeah, it's a Tanka.
Tanka.
T-A-N-K-A, yeah.
And it's, is it 57577?
It's 57577.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about, so that when we say that, we mean syllables,
syllables,
right?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
Okay. There was a question
so
about
So it's like
that.
A haiku. The first part's a haiku, and then you've got this kind of volta turn at the end.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And there's, when you were saying that earlier, I was struck by, like, I've heard writing advice, which is like, because you mentioned about incorporating pieces from the previous days and kind of continuing your momentum. I've heard writing advice, which is like, you know, stop in the middle of what you're doing. So that way, and if you feel good about it, so that way the next day you sit down and you're like, oh yeah, I remember. And then you pick it back up. Because if you stop when you're stuck, you might return to it and also be stuck. So I think that's a pretty interesting way of doing it. And now, so that form, that 57577, that's different from it. It says haiku would be a Japanese form, I think. Is that?
Yeah, I think they're both Japanese.
They're both
forms,
Japanese.
But,
okay.
You know, I don't claim to be an expert, but what I will claim is that gave me a limitation or a restriction that I could work in, and I only had to write 5 lines, and I felt like that was doable every day.
Sure.
So I could sustain it as a practice.
Right. So we're talking about a quick.
Yeah.
Quick little limitation. It's almost like a prompt, but in a certain way of, okay, well, now I have these parameters. We're talking about taking a picture, something. These are the small steps that maybe, if we're talking some utility, maybe these could be some of the small steps. And I do think, like, kind of being in advance of the holidays, if that is a time in particular that some folks might be wanting to focus in on some of these artistic ways of being able to do that, those might be some good ways to start and where we could do that. But so to that end, I just want to thank my guests so much. I want to thank Catherine Torgerson. Her exhibit is Infinite Blue with Grief and Gratitude. It can be seen now through February 1st at the Rochester Contemporary Art Center. And as we mentioned, the Grief Focused Writing Workshop is taking place January 18th. I want to thank my other guest, Charlie Cote, licensed clinical social worker. The practice is Path Forward Counseling, as well as the Creative Wellness Practice.
Yeah, and our website is explorepathforward.com.
Cool. And thank you both so much for your vulnerability, for your expertise, and I really appreciate being here.
Thanks so much.
And my name is Patrick Hoskin. Thank you once again, as always, for supporting member-supported public radio.